I alert everyone of us here that we are scheduled to start at 9:30. The new rules of Parliament instruct us as and when we convene, we have the third of committee members. The third of committee members in agriculture, in the water and sanitation, is four members. Now we are this number that you can see. There's an apology from the rural development. They have a committee that is meeting as well. I don't know how it works when it comes to joint committee, because there is only one member from agriculture. I repeat, when we have a joint committee session, except for an apology from rural development, we still have one member from agriculture. For that reason, we shall have to delay a bit, trusting that the numbers will populate. Then we convene officially. Apologies for that late start. Owner of that farm. when that farm changing hands, those rights remain with that individual. We've identified this item for us, especially having to invite rural development and land reform and also agriculture. Has been very critical for those downstream areas of activity. Especially as the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform needs to be engaged in land reform program. A number of those finding it difficult to succeed, precisely because, for example, would have been a case in point where I meet with this other farmer. He tells me that he has a farm, part of land reform as a beneficiary. However, he does not have water. We can go further. In my previous life in agriculture, having visited one farm, and you are showed a before and after. A before land reform, wherein you have a cooperative, how the farm looks like. Very green, with a dam, very active. After, very brown, very inactive. All what you have there are simple petals that are literally just grazing whatever is left out of that farm. As we have been engaging in this work of ours as the Committee on Water and Sanitation, it also became very clear that at some point we will have to call for a public hearing wherein these beneficiaries of this land reform program and others, those that still find it difficult to have access to water. Yesterday at night I was talking to one other friend of mine who was telling me that even in cases where the farm dwellers are to be residents in those farms, they find it even difficult to have access to water because they are told as farm dwellers that you go out there and source your own rights to have access to water. Whenever we talk in our community here, the language also in the department is that water is life. Without water, our lives are very, very difficult to run. Whether you are going to be in the industry, as in manufacturing, of your beverages, or in the industry insofar as mining is concerned, power generation, agriculture, in our own homes, you have your own experiences when there is no water. You wake up in the morning, there is no water. You literally get so disorganized that whole day. You'll have to go to the bathroom, you'll have to take a shower, you'll have to eat, and there is no water. You struggle the whole day. You get very disorganized the whole day. That's what we are dealing with here. We have invited the Department of Water and Sanitation to come and brief us on the right, on this right. We have also extended an invitation to the farming community, the farmers community, apologies. In this instance, APASA has since been invited. They are present with us today. I'm sure they will just raise their hands and then they are seen where they are. We've also invited AgriSA. The invite only goes as far as
those invited having to come and listen. So I'm not going to be expected to make any presentation, as I suppose, and I will also trust that that invitation does say that. As I said earlier on, a process of legislation is underway. That process is also going to encapsulate habit here, wherein we shall all be expected to make those necessary inputs as it were. We have also extended an invitation to the respective departments, the departments, agriculture, forest and fisheries, and see hands if there is or if there are any. Okay. And also from rural development and land reform. Thank you, sir. So those are the people that have been since been invited to our committee here. Well, the Department of Water and Sanitation shall be presenting free from the department, the department, to make the necessary inputs. Feel free, precisely because we're getting one submission from a government department, or the sister department, entering in in a grand style is the whip of the committee on agriculture. I almost called you comrade.
The comrade, yes.
Oh, okay, he's just confirmed. So that is what we are about today. It's a very important grouping. It has got its own far-reaching, together with the legislation that is coming. Far-reaching consequences, as far as the transformation of water is concerned in our country. Whether we're going to be talking about accessibility, or we're going to be talking about access, or we're going to be talking about quality of such water. Now, these are the issues that are going to be at stake. So we are to be handling that particular legislation. I tell you that is fine for us members. Once again, good morning, those that have just arrived. We have introduced each other, Mr. Maloy. I tell you also that Mr. Skit, you are leading the department in this regard. Okay. Without waste of time, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Honourable Chair, do you want me to introduce the team, or shall I just proceed? Okay, on my right, we have Shoki Mulotu. She's Acting Director of Policy and Coordination. Then on my left is Okozane Masibuku. She's Acting Director of Water Allocation. Then it is Toko Sakwasa. She's the Chief Director of Institutional Oversight. And then Asha Peterson, Acting CEO, Bathory Funds. And then Eustacia Bukalatos, she's the Director of Institutional Oversight as well. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I will take you through the slides. I'm not going to go into the detailed slides, but I'll try and summarize where possible. So, Chair, I'll give you the background. I'm going to run through the policy principles underpinning the National Water Act. Then we're going to talk about the riparian rights, riparian principle, then the so-called sunset provisions of the National Water Act, then measures to expedite the eradication of historical rights, and then we can do the so-called VNV, which is the verification and the validation of water use to determine historical water rights. And then I'm going to talk about compulsory licensing. I'll also talk about the new policy review. Just in terms of the background, this regime inherited from the previous regime, Water Act 54 of 1956, where the water users enjoyed riparian rights. That means that if you're a farmer and you are right next to a water resource or a water stream, you've got the only right to use that water. And there are no other people in the other areas, if they don't sit in right adjacent to the river, have got any rights. The effect of this is that water users not located near the rivers were at mercy of the residual water. So they don't have any rights. It's only the water that is available to the people sitting next to the river. The birth result of this was that water could not be conveniently allocated or matched with the developmental needs. And the principle conferred the permanent rights and by default ownership of water by riparian users. So this whole thing was locking the possibility of distributing this water to other users. Management of water use was less stringent and did not take into account the basic environmental consideration of resource sustainability. And Honourable Chair, I'll talk about the reserve later on. Now, due to the lack of transformation and other insufficiencies of this system, in 1997, the Department of Water, at the time, I think it was Water and Environmental Affairs, promulgated the water policy, which spelled out the departure from the 1956 Water Act. So that was the precursor of the 1998 National Water Act. In the principles, it spelled out that all water, wherever it occurs in the water cycle, is a resource common to all, so the use of which shall be subject to national control. It means that the Minister of Water and Sanitation, as is currently the case, is the custodian of all water in the country. There shall be no ownership of water, but only a right for the environmental and basic human needs. So that's the only right that is in the National Water Act, and that is that you've got a right for the ecology, and you've got a right for basic human needs. Principle 4, the location of the water resource in relation to land shall not in itself confer provincial rights to the usage. That's what I spoke about by riparian rights, that will now fall away. The objective of managing the quantity, quality and reliability of the nation's water resource is to achieve optimum long-term and sustainable use of water. And that's what the reserve also made provision for, is that we use the water in a sustainable manner so that the water can last forever. Principle 8. Now these are the water policy principles underpinning the National Water Act. Still, the water required to ensure that all people have access to sufficient water shall be reserved. The quantity, quality and reliability of water required to maintain ecological functions, human retention shall be reserved. So these talk about the typical reserve or reserve that I spoke about. So you protect water for basic human needs and to protect the water for the environment. So that's what Principle 10 spells out, the water required to meet basic human needs and then also the right for the ecology. Principles underpinning the National Water Act, again, national, international water resources. So what we're saying is that we can't use water in South Africa. We are bordering a couple of countries and we've got memorandum of agreements between South Africa and the other countries around us so that we can't use all the water. But there is an agreement in terms of quality and quality of what quantity and quality of what we shall release to them. National government is a custodian of the nation's water resource as an indivisible national asset. Number 14, water resources shall be developed, apportioned and managed in such a manner as to enable the user sector to gain equitable access. So again, it spells out that everybody should have the right to use the water and that we should use the water in a sustainable manner. Now, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, departing from the riparian principle, so now we have to move away, because this is what we inherited. Now, as we try to move away from the riparian principle, Section 3 of the National Water Act explains the public trusteeship of the water resources confers the management of our water resources to the Minister. Again, Minister is the custodian. Section 6, which provides the content of the water resource strategy, which is amongst others the requirements for reserve cross-boundary shared water obligations. The department does water resource strategies, national water resource strategy. I think the second one has just been approved, and that covers all the water resources in South Africa in terms of the current use and also the long-term use of it. In section 16, 17, and 18, by provision for the relationship effect to the reserve again. 43 to 48, which relates to compulsory licensing, that is undertaken to, amongst others, better management of the resource. And I'll talk about that a bit later, which now tells us how do we take this challenge that we have forward. The so-called sunset provisions. So these are the provisions in the Water Act, the different sections that actually protect some of the existing lawful users so that they can still use the water. And that's the challenge that we have. That water is actually locked, and the whole idea is now to unlock that. So section 32 and 33 is exactly what it says. So that people, if people had the right to use the water legally, we can't just take away that right. Section 34 of the Water Act, that grants historical water users to continue to use water as a recognized form of historical entitlement until its replacement with a water use license. 35, which provides for the verification of existing lawful use, which is nothing than a confirmation of the historical allocation. 25.2, although using the word entitlement instead of a right, it however entrenches the ownership of water in the sense that it allows the holder of unused water to keep the water used in the event. So again, it's not good because you don't unlock the water. So that water is still there and it's been used by the various owners. Now, measures to expedite the eradication, because this is the challenge that we certainly want to unlock this situation. The policy review necessary to close gaps and deal with impediments and unintended consequences in the current water policy and legislation to facilitate the water review process. There are 12 policy positions that were approved by Cabinet in December 2013. The so-called use it or lose it principle with regards to the water use. So that's the verification and validation, and that's the process that I will elaborate later on. And of course, then we can bring in the compulsory licensing where we put everything back into one pot and then we make a decision and we start from scratch. The water trading between authorized water users, compliance and enforcement. There's one licensing. I can say that we've already issued 205 licenses to HDIs with a total volume of 42 million cubic meters in the last 3 years and 12.3 million cubic meters only in 1670. So at least we recognize that there is a problem, but given the current legislation, we're still trying to overcome this challenge. Okay. Measures to expedite it, prioritizing social and economic equity in the reallocation of water, so we have to look at the socio-economic equity, so we try to give water to people that don't have water, because you cannot allow farmers to keep on irrigating and there are communities next door that don't have water for potable use. So far, 1,348 resourceful farmers were supported during 2016. The authorization issued, the water is readily available. So what we see is if you look at stressed water catchments and you look at unstressed catchments. So if there's a stressed catchment, it's very difficult because then the water is actually over allocated. So you don't have water in spare. But the moment you've got water available, the department can give a general authorization so that we make this water available for people. Water set aside, water, and these are just examples, Chairperson, of work that has been done during the last couple of years. And reviewing of the new pricing strategy is to subsidize HDIs. We're in the process of reviewing the pricing strategy to try and make it easier and cheaper for people who don't have access to water, that will have access to water, but also to make it more affordable for them, because it doesn't help if you give water to people and it's not affordable. Reviewing of priority, that means multiple water use approach in planning infrastructure. So with that, we're saying this: if you look at who's using the water, it's for farming, but there's also industry, there's municipalities, there are mines. So we have to look at the bigger picture. We can't only focus on either irrigation or what. So you've got the reserve now, which tells you that it's for basic human needs and for ecology, but there are other uses as well. So we see the bigger picture. Then the last one there is the availability of the reuse of effluent. The typical acid mine drainage problem that we have, we're trying to make that water available. And also what we're trying to do is there are a couple of areas in South Africa where there's a lot of acid mine drainage decanting from areas where the water just flows into the river. And we are working closely together with the Strategic Water Partners Network Group. And what we're doing there is, for instance, in the Mpumalanga area, we now have 60 hectares that we're going to irrigate with acid mine drainage, and then also making available more jobs for people, and then also we can use this water in a much better way than just releasing it untreated into a water system. The verification process. So what do we do? What is validation verification? That's the process that we started. Validation is a process to confirm the extent of water use that took place during the qualifying period. Verification is to determine lawful use based on the laws that were enforced prior to the promulgation. So it's actually checking the status quo of the water and to see whether the farmers are using the water, and if they are using the water, whether the registered water are the correct registration, and whether there's fault, there are faults there. This one. Yeah, this is just the 9 water management areas in South Africa. We have similar challenges countrywide, so we're dealing with the VMD or the validation verification in all the water management areas. The important factors about the verification process is meant to determine the current lawful status, I'll mention that, and it confirms both existing lawful use in a qualifying period and the current use. So there are farmers that are protected, however, we're trying to get out of it so that we make water available. These are just the processes that we've started, and this is giving you a status of where we are now. The Bath Olifants Chair, I'm not going to go into the detail, it's available there. Some of them have been completed, some of them are in process. However, what is important is that by 17-18, you can see that we want to complete the verification and validation process countrywide. So we're limiting ourselves in time and we're trying to speed up this process. So the impact of this will promote balance between the supply and the demand, and the amount of water made available as a result of it can be used to meet the reserve and possibly allocate to HDIs where water is available, and then provide certainty to existing lawful use across the country. Okay, you can skip. These are the under-registered water users. Now you get the 3 categories. When people register for water, you get some people that over-register. So they say they're using 100 cubic meters per day or whatever, and they're actually using 200 per day. So these are actually over-registered, so they're using more water than what they should. Then the next one is the existing lawful use. This is what you have. In other words, if the farmer is correct in saying that I'm using 100, he's using 100. But then we also have the unlawful use of water, where people not registering or saying that they're using water at a certain level, but they're using much more water than that. Okay, please keep that. This is just the water that was identified unlawful. I mean, I'm not going to go through the figures there. Please keep it. Those are the verified volumes already done. Okay. Now the compulsory licensing. So let's go to the next slide. It's easy to explain. So Chair, what do you mean with compulsory licensing? We say once we've done the validation verification and we see that this is a stressed catchment, what you then do is the minister can then say that all the water users and all the licenses thrown in one pot. So that if you have an existing right, you actually lose that in the beginning, and then we look at the picture from scratch. So now we have a new pool of water. And then the next slide shows you that this is the redistribution, and this is what compulsory licensing means. So the minister can withdraw all the licenses in a specific catchment, and of course it depends from stressed to unstressed catchments, and this is what we're doing, and it has been done in some of the catchments already. And this counts now for surface water, but it's also for groundwater. So why do we conduct compulsory licensing? Is to achieve fair allocations in stressed catchments, to review the current water use to achieve equity, to promote the official use of water, to facilitate management and protect the quality of the water, because quality is also very important. It's of no use if you have a dam full of water and the water is actually not suitable for any use. So you have to protect the quality as well. So the whole idea is to level the playing fields. I mean, that's the idea of compulsory licensing. Okay. So this is just the legislative process, what we follow. You call for compulsory licensing, then you propose allocation schedule, then there's a preliminary allocation schedule, final allocation, and then the issuing of water use license. And this is a process where we consult with the user. So it's not as if we're taking away water one day, and then, you know, the next day the farmers or whoever hasn't got the water. It's a process that we consult with everybody and try to get a happy medium so everybody gets the water. So these are just examples of where it has been done already, so that Chairperson and honourable members, that you can see from Water Affairs side, we're really trying. It's not something that is just on paper. So from Water Affairs side, we're trying, and you know, in some cases we are very, very successful. And this is the idea to do it in the rest of the country as well. We can keep the rest. So we did it for Jan Dassel, also for Mitchell Thesis. Now, in terms of the legislative review roadmap, so currently we have the National Water Act and we have the National Water Services Act. So the whole idea is to have, so where are we in this process? Cabinet amendment to the DG, quarter 3 of 2016, so we've been processing that. Presentations to the different clusters also in this quarter, and then the minister presents the bill for gazetting for public comment also in this year, quarter 4 of 2016. Then we have a consultation period of 90 days, that will be done in the first quarter of 2017. Certification by state law, quarter 2 of 2017. And then the very last one says that the submission of the bill to Parliament will be done in quarter 3 of 2017. Chair, that's from my side. Just in summary, so what we're trying to do is we inherited an act which protects the riparian rights that locks the process to get water to people where we want the water to go to. So the whole process here is to unlock the process, the water situation, so that we can distribute or redistribute the water where it's most needed. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that, Mr. Pitch. Let's allow agriculture. I'm not sure if the rural development has any. Oh, by the way, very much. Do you have any presentation to submit, sir?
Yes, Honorable Chair, the last presentation that was requested from us, that's briefly on the challenges we have in terms of water allocation and land reform.
Do you have anything prepared that has been circulated?
Yes, we did circulate the presentation.
Oh, okay. Let's allow a discussion then, followed by. Did you also receive the one from a discussion? Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. We thank you for the opportunity. We touch.
And you can also just quickly make a comment. You know, meeting with Mr. Vendana, you think that, you know, he's here on Afasa. That's what came to mind. You know, even when you were asking a question as to whether, you know, can be expected maybe to or a submission, and then I was quite pointed to say, not for a pastor, and if you did hear me, I can see you now wearing a different hat. They managed to co-opt you.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. The department is used to fed farmers in order to address every farmer out there. Chair, we have prepared a presentation, but when I spoke to you and said there was a confusion, I thought there was our group supposed to present, so I did not receive it. And now, thank you for the opportunity. I felt very represented by somebody from here. Chair, we are just going to highlight the significance of water in the farming community and the percentage use of that water by us. It's 3%, for example, of water is used by agriculture, forestry. I would allow Mary Jane to our director of sanitation and agriculture.
Thank you, DG, for the introduction. It was a mouthful. Basically, our presentation looks at what has already been mentioned by the Department of Water Affairs, except in the fact that the riparian rights were originally recognized by the Irrigation and Water Conservation Act of 1912, and this was followed then by the Act that was mentioned by Mr. Chief in 1956, which is now being repealed and followed by the Water Act 36 of 1998. Basically, I won't go through that, but to summarize, the current Water Act stipulates that the Department of Water and Sanitation will have water resources on behalf of the nation, that it sets out to accommodate the socio-economic demands of environmental management and access to water for all people, and that it provides exclusive rights, that all exclusive rights to water use which were enforced before 1998 were replaced by water allocation granted by the Department of Water and Sanitation. Now basically, Dutch role in terms of that is to participate in the coordination committees of agriculture water, which is chaired by provincial structures and deals, amongst other things, application for water for agricultural purposes, as well as to report on progress on irrigation projects. As part of the coordination committee for agricultural water, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries makes recommendations on application for water to the Department of Water and Sanitation. We are also, as a department, supportive of the water allocation reform strategy and are currently supporting our farmers who have requested for assistance in applying for water entitlements and licenses. However, our concern is the duration of 300 days that it takes for a water use license to be approved. Agricultural purposes in riparian zones, DAF is saying that we should be compliant to the rules and regulations as stipulated in the environmental, agriculture and water legislation of the country. The department also supports research which we look at the water usage of the agriculture sector, as mentioned by my DG. We are the largest user of water in the country. So we co-fund research where we're looking at water use efficient methods and implementing those through our funding mechanism of CUSP and Illinois. We are looking at the use of satellite imagery to look where our farmers are over irrigating. Actually, we have piloted the fruit loop in the Western Cape, where they're looking at, they're providing a free service to farmers where they can see their over irrigation and the on their fields, and it's a measure of saving water. There are other techniques like the VAS system, and we're currently trying to undertake the same fruit loop initiative for the rest of the country, looking at other parts as well. The DAF has also developed the irrigation strategy that looks at a number of irrigation schemes that need to be revitalized, as well as looking at the number of hectares of land which can be further irrigated. It also makes mentions of where these areas are, but most of it is dependent on the construction of bulk infrastructure by the Department of Water and Sanitation. As mentioned, our funding mechanisms of CASP and Ilimalitima are currently being utilized in our provinces to revitalize irrigation schemes, as well as change current irrigation practices which are not water use efficient to more water use efficient technologies and methods like the drip and the micro irrigation. DAF also chairs the Water Use and Irrigation Working Group, where we plan and discuss and share information on irrigation initiatives being undertaken in the provinces. The provincial departments of agriculture, the ARC, Agriculture Research Council, the Water Research Commission, Water and Sanitation and Department of Rural Development are permanent members of Water Use and the Irrigation Working Group. Other stakeholders are also invited, depending on the topics that are discussed. We're hoping that the Portfolio Committee notes staff perspective on water rights in terms of water use allocations and impact, and that the Portfolio Committee accepts the reports and provides guidance should they come. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. Straight to the point. Rural Zilliman.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My presentation, I'll just summarize it as well and zoom into the slide that talks to issues that deals with the issue of water allocation to land reform beneficiaries. Firstly, I think one, just to give context on our mandate, as you know, we are dealing with land reform in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution of the Republic, and then we are dealing with four programs: land redistribution, land tenure reform, land restitution, and land development. As we acquire and transfer this land to beneficiaries, obviously we're dealing with agribusinesses, we're dealing with enterprises on this, which are existing businesses, and we therefore need water. Most of these farms, they have water needs, and they have water rights as well. Now, in terms of our process, I'll just zoom into the very last two slides. I'm not going to deal with the issues around the river. But if you look at the very last two slides, we're saying as a department, we have signed an MOU with the Department of Water and Sanitation, which was signed off by our Director General in January 2015, which begins to identify, to define the roles between the two departments, especially for what we expect from Department of Water and Sanitation with regards to the issue of water allocation and water entitlements. Is the prioritization of the allocation of water use entitlements to our land reform beneficiaries. The second key role in the MOU that we have signed is the provision of support and water use related advice to our approval structures, where we approve all these land applications, and also to ensure that land reform beneficiaries are assisted with water authorization. The reason why we signed the MOU is that in most instances where we have awarded rights on land to beneficiaries, we have discovered that we do acquire the land. Part of the determination of the value of the land includes water rights. But in some instances, we discover that some of the water rights that exist in those farms that we acquire, they've expired. Some of them, they're not lawful, but there is an irrigation on the farm. That is one challenge. And also, as part of the payment on water rights, on the rates, they still remain a challenge for land reform beneficiaries. That is why we were saying in the MOU that we have signed, the Department of Water Affairs and Sanitation must look into that and prioritize our land reform beneficiaries. Because we have got instances where we have acquired the farms, but at the end of the day, the farms are in the value of being repossessed by the water board because of outstanding water rates or charges that I carry over from the previous seller when the farm was acquired in terms of restitution or redistribution. And secondly, when we do the land transactions across all the programs of land reform, we still have a challenge around farm dwellers and labor tenants in terms of access to water for domestic purposes, not necessarily for irrigation, because of the main fact that the water currently is in the name of the seller, not necessarily is not linked to the farm. They say if the seller decides to sell one portion of the farm, but the water source is in the other portion which is not on sale, then our beneficiaries, even if there is an irrigation system on the portion that we are acquiring in terms of land reform, but the water rights will remain with the seller on the other portion. Hence, you discover that I think the Honorable Chair was saying one of the land reform beneficiaries are complaining they've got water. They've got the land which was under irrigation prior to acquisition by the state. All of a sudden, there's no water. There are no water rights on the portions they've acquired. Because in some instances, the water source is on the portions that we have not acquired, but the farmer was irrigating both portions or all the portions. We ended up acquiring the other portion, and the rights remain on the other portion with the seller, because they have not sold all the properties to the state. In some transactions, we also discovered that in terms of land reform, there are quite a number of unlawful usage of water. When we acquire, we are under the assumption that the water rights, and when we pursue the matter, we discover that even those water rights, the water is being used under irrigation, but the very same seller is using it unlawfully. So it becomes very difficult for the state when we acquire to also acquire the land with the rights, which are indeed unlawful. We have discussed this matter with the Department of Water Affairs in our structures, because now there are permanent members of our approval structures for land transactions in the department. They are constant members in our committees, which is a good a shift. We discussed it, but currently we still have a challenge where the prioritization in terms of water allocation to our land reform beneficiaries immediately after land transfer is not as fast as we would love it to be, such that we acquire the land and then we wait for the allocation or a water use certificate or authorization immediately after land transfer. We take some time and it affects production on the farm. These are just limited circumstances which we have discovered as well. We had one farm that we wanted to acquire, but when we did the inspection and our valuer went to the property, we discovered that there was the water has been deviated from the natural source to this particular farm. And now the question is, do we include those rights to that water in the transaction for us to acquire the farm? But we discovered that for our own purposes, when you look at it, it was illegal digging a trench, diverting the natural water to your own farm, such that there was an overflow of dams in that particular property. We can provide those details to the department. Because we just not agree with the land owner in terms of the water rights that exist. We just want the confirmation. And lastly, Chairperson and honourable members, we have said our proposal to Department of Water Affairs while the review is that maybe we need to look at water allocated to the farm rather than a person or a seller or an owner, because by the time we go to this farm, you find that a portion of the water, the rights of the to that farm, have been sold somewhere else, and then when we buy the farm, the water is not sufficient for the new land reform beneficiary to proceed with the production on the farm. Thank you. Those are just the highlights, but the details are in the submission, in the presentation that I provided. Thank you very much.
Members, that is a summary of all of the three submissions by the respective departments. A number of issues have been raised. You know, I can still have the words in the mind of that fellow in Somerset East. Can't remember his name. This is literally last year, wherein the repeal took place in 1998 of the 1996 Act. But he still, and the gentleman from rural development and also from agriculture, are still persisting that whilst the review has been effected, but the reality looms large, that there is still a situation where the previous owners are still having to cling to the water rights, whilst a repeal has been effected. And what are we doing with that? So that's what comes to mind. Your programs on land reform, you know, saying yesterday to the minister, you know, in our private talk, one among other reasons why the programs on rural development, I was saying to him, to put it bluntly, why they are failing, it is because of this issue that we're dealing with. And what are we doing with that? I saw your hand, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, it's already member, so sorry to be number one on this chair.
No, no. I saw your hand, Mr. McCondo.
Chair, I think you've already laid the foundation for a discussion on these issues. Now, and what is encouraging, Chair, is that the department currently is in the process legislation to address some of these issues. I think they will be able to gain a lot out of this engagement. But again, it's going to help us, Chair, to prepare ourselves when the amendment comes before Parliament. We will be ready with a clear understanding as to where we are going with regards to the new amendment. Now, let me just be controversial and Chair, not much, but I think just take it because it's reality that we are dealing with. In the arrival, of the Dutch East Indian Company in 1652, Chair, one of the things that they established was to deal with issues of water. You know that it was a refreshment station, especially to supply ships from Europe going to the East with water. What does that tell you, Chair, is that from the beginning, the interest of water started there. The establishment of the Cape of Good Hope led to what we call today the Republic as a whole. It started there. Now the issue of water became very critical. The state took control via that company. But as the process moved forward, you'll know that somewhere after the British took over, they introduced laws that were governing water themselves too. The British, when they took over from the Dutch until the Union of South Africa somewhere in 1910, when the Cape Colony, the Transvaal, the Free State come together and formed the new Boer Republic, water has been the source. In fact, in all of that, water has been the issue that needed to be legislated and to be controlled under the state. So it agrees. I agree with your point that water is life, and without water, there's nothing we can do. So therefore, Chair, what does this thing then tell us, Guti? You are dealing with a serious issue of transformation. It's not just the issue of amendment of the Act and all of that, because throughout history, your African population, indigenous people, were never afforded an opportunity or beneficiary. Throughout, you can trace back with almost 350 years ago. I'm not being very disorganized or controversial. It's a fact that your indigenous people were left outside the process. In all these repealing rights and all of that, there is nowhere where you take into account the indigenous people, except the fact that land reform will tell you you're now dealing with issues of forced removal. All those streams throughout the country, you can see it when you fly from Cape Town to Johannesburg, you look on the ground there, you can see that all those streams are occupied. They were not occupied yesterday, they were occupied as early as 350 years ago. Now, it therefore means, Chair, that what we are dealing with is a transformation agenda that requires all of us to be committed. It means that your agriculture, it may be the union, the establishment, the land reform, we'll have to work together to address this thing. Because if we don't check, these are some of the things that sparked the revolution in a small way. You look at the Madibe situation, for example. It's a township there in the northwest, shortage of water, but there's so much water that the mining community uses in that area. The mine in the Rustenburg area. In one mine called Lonnie, they use more than 100 cubic meters of water, 1 million cubic meters of water daily, when the local population cannot even benefit from it. So I'm saying that, in fact, you came at the right time to have this engagement starting in the portfolio committee, but concurrent with what is happening with the department. So I'm saying, therefore, that, Chairperson, that what we need to do tonight is to get to know. The current situation is clearly being presented today, to us today. What is it that the bill will look at, without really getting to the bill itself, but what areas that the department is looking at? Because we're talking transformation. We're talking transformation. In the transformation, what is it that you are looking at? What are the key fundamental areas that you are looking at? And I will tell you that one of the key things will be beneficial of community. The ownership, again, comes to be one of those areas. Who owns water? We have asked that question. Who owns water? If we have the riparian right that gives rights to those who are living within the streams to have access to water, who owns water? Therefore, what kind of a system do we have in place to police those who are using water? You know, 67% of water is under irrigation in the country. 67%. Are we satisfied that, as a department, is it satisfied that every single drop of that 67% of water is being accounted for? You know, so these are some of the things that we need. When I say drop, I mean anyone that uses that water. I don't mean a drop, but it's a fact that if the state owns water, will know every drop of water that goes, can say half of the drop, the whole drop must be known. So I'm saying, therefore, we need to gear ourselves, and the opportunity, I think, is presented now that come the time to deal with the bill, stakeholders will prepare themselves, then let's get into the whole issue of transformation. What others, water is business for them. It's what is business. It's profit-making. Others, it's a resource that they must benefit. So those who are making business with water and those who are beneficiaries of water as a result will have to deal with that what's called. It's the same as you deal with issues of mineral rights check and the issue of land. You can't separate water and land. You can't separate the two. So somehow we need to find a way in which how do we sort of synchronize or bring together these areas of land, the areas of water, and the whole question of beneficiation. So I thought, for me, that is very historic, that the state throughout history has been in control of water, but to benefit certain category of people when majority of indigenous people are left outside and put in areas where there's not literally there's nothing. And rural development in addressing and the issue of land reform. The fertile land, you're not dealing with it, in fact. You're still buying the land in those dry areas. The fertile land, you have the beers, you may name them, your Val River stream and all of that, it's occupied by certain people which the indigenous people are not there. And you cannot be saying that we are buying so much hectares of land, dry land. Let's go inside where there's what you call a bigger interest, which is the fertile land. Every dam that you construct in the country, those who occupy the dam, before you even dream of bringing in, already there's development. And who are those people? Are people have been benefiting throughout? You know, so we need to address this thing, Chair. I'm saying that it's political. It must be revolutionary in our address. Meaning that, and when I say revolutionary, I don't mean fight. I mean that it must be revolutionized in the manner that we must change from what it is to a better that benefits everybody. So those are my just few points here. They may sound very controversial, but I think that it's an issue that you can't separate. When you deal with land, you deal with water. And when you deal with water, you deal with life. So thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Mrs. Baker, followed by Mr. McConnell. No said to Mr. Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. I have to agree with Mr. Jones, yes, it is a controversial subject, and it's always going to be controversial until we resolve it. So I welcome the steps that we are taking to resolve the issue, and I think we're still a long way from there, but once the procedure is started, I'm sure we can work around it. But, Chair, some of the issues I have with regard specifically to the sunset clause in the Act, the National Water Act, I cannot understand how, when this Act was enacted, that a sunset clause could be left wide open. Because that seems to be the report that we're getting, that prior to the Act, well, those who were using it would just carry on using it. Then what was the point of the Act? It doesn't seem to make sense. So I've actually read it a little further, and as the department has pointed out in their presentation, the sunset clause is regulated in sections 32 and 33 of the Act. But you cannot read that in isolation, so you've got to read it in conjunction with section 22 of the Act, which stipulates how a user, an unlicensed user can use the water, but it's actually under certain conditions. So are we or are we not enforcing those specific conditions? And then if you read section 2, section 22, you've got to read further. You've got to read it in conjunction with section 39 and with schedule 1. So none of these things are in isolation. You've got to read them all in conjunction, because the one section informs the next section. Now if you look at section 22, it speaks about general authorization. Now I'm questioning, are these users who are using water under the sunset clause, are they subject to the general authorization as a user? Because that then gives the department or gives the minister specific rights and a specific time frame, because I think that is the general problem with the sunset clause, is that there is no time frame. You cannot just use this water indefinitely. There's no time frame allocated to it. And I think when we review the Act, that has got to be taken into consideration, the time frame of this, the use, whether it's rights or water use licenses or whatever. There's got to be time frames allocated, or actually adhered to, not just allocated. But the general authorization gives the minister the authority to revoke. She can, although there's no specific time frame, the minister can. Please correct me, Mr. Abelda, if I'm incorrect. With the general authorization, if I'm reading it incorrectly, but the minister can then revoke that general authorization, which means we can then take some action. Then, my concern with the verification process of the water, under the current, the 2015-16 AGES report, there are notes there that there was no verification process taken under the current financial year under review. Now, what is the reason for that? Why was there no verification process followed? How do we know who is using our water and how much water they are using if we are not following procedure and not verifying the use of this water and the allocation of this water? Who monitors the overall allocation? And I think it gets a bit, I was listening to the agricultural sector's presentation, and they've got the irrigation strategy. Does that form part of the whole verification process? How many different policies and different strategies? Are we verifying all these different policies from all the different departments when we do the verification strategy? And does that then inform the overall process? Because then it becomes a huge, a mammoth task. Which brings me to my next point. The verification process cannot be a once-off process. It's got to be an ongoing process that takes place continuously, as licenses are being continuously allocated. How are we monitoring that? Because my concern is that we're not monitoring that sufficiently. How many people, do we have the capacity, do we have a dedicated team? How many people are actually part of the whole verification process? We have officers, the satellite officers in each province. Are these people capacitated? My question, Chair, is about capacity to monitor the verification and the allocation of our water. I don't believe, judging by the presentation that we've had, that we do have the capacity, and what are we going to do about that? Let me leave some for some of the other members as well.
Thanks, Chair. Mr.
Mukondo,
followed by Mr.
Fasson. Yeah, Chairperson, really, this is a contentious issue to deal with. And it's unfortunate we've been missing in action in dealing with this matter. I've checked the APP of the department, Chair, which I think is a point which Mr. Baker has pointed out, that there was no validation conducted during that particular period of the water user. And again, I'm asking that question, why that happened. But again, it is true that agriculture uses 67% of the water. I just want to understand whether that is an allocation that has been allocated to them, or in real sense, they are using that 67%. And if there's no validation or verification, how do you deal with that situation? It's a fact, Chair, that since 1998, there were more than 1,200 new licenses which were issued by the department. 98% of the people who received those licenses were white farmers. The question is, do black farmers apply for these licenses? And if they do, what then happens? Because it's a continuation of the score. And the Department of Rural Development, it's going ahead with their program of land restitution. And that particular program failed. Whereas white farmers continue to receive this water licenses. What's the problem? Check. The other issue, Chair, I listened to the presenter from the department telling us that they have been confronted with that. And we have always raised the issue of new legislation in order to change the law. It's not forthcoming. Why? At points we begin to suspect that there is a defiance from within. This can't continue to happen. And we must begin to look into this thing, and the department must be able to give us a clear program of action in relation to the new legislation to make sure that we change the status quo. Thanks, Chair.
Mr.
Basak? Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I think first we need to clear up the perception. The perception that's being laid here is that water belongs to the individual, and that's wrong. Water belongs to the property, the land, the farming land. Does not, it's registered against the title deed of a property. Are you correct to say that some of the properties were were bought without water rights. But there's a process. The National Water Act Section 25 says that a farmer may apply with the department for the transfer. So if water has been transferred from one portion to another portion, there's a process which the department agrees upon. Now, let's also, I would use the same example as my colleague has used. Let's use Hartbeespoort Dam. It's full. There's a lot of water. There's a canal system. In the 40s when they built, in the 50s when they built the dam, they built it to get farmers to get portions of land, and they got scheduled water. In Afrikaans, ingelyste water. That was attached to the property of that. You bought 10 hectares with 5 hectares of water that is scheduled to that portion of the property. It's like that's got a value, and I agree 100%. A portion of property with water has got a price. A property without water has got no price. So if the government is buying property without water, they are making the mistake. They should buy property that's got water. And they should make sure that, you know, and I believe that the government should not allow farmers to transfer water from one property to another and then sell that property. It should be sold with that, because otherwise that property's got no agricultural value if there's not water to that property. It's like me buying a vehicle tomorrow and then you tell me it uses petrol, and then you tell me, listen, good luck, you bought this property, or you're not allowed to throw in petrol in this vehicle anymore. I've got no use for that vehicle. So, Chair, I think we should be clear on the matter, is that water does not belong to an individual. It belongs to a property. And we should not create a situation where it has been said, white people own the water. It's not true. It's not the individual that owns. The owner, whoever the owner is, whoever the owner is in the future, even if it's a foreigner, that property which is being owned, whether it's been owned by a company, a trust, an individual, that water belongs to that property and not to the individual. Because if we get into the situation where we say white people are owning the water, that perception is wrong. Whoever is a farmer on that portion will, he can leave tomorrow, the government will buy that property tomorrow, the next owner will go on there, that water should stay and will be with that property. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. My name is colleagues and President Chapman. We should not lose the fact that we were in a workshop where there was this the union that represented the small scale farmers and their farmers. Which indicated to us that their biggest challenge was water. They don't have water. And then when they were, before they got the farm, there was an indication. They knew that the water was being provided. Then after they got the farm, water did not come. So they wanted even us in the workshop to assist them. Which indicates that the issue of water is a challenge, more especially for farmers. The Department of Rural Development and Land Reform indicated that they have got a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Water and Sanitation. May I check, what impact does this memorandum of understanding have in this issue of water allocation? and what not. Because as it looks like, you still have the challenge where you buy it from, but the water rights are not there. You also indicated that a new farmer will have some challenge on his land or taken away because he might be having a challenge of having to pay the money that was owned by the previous owner. If the department can tell me, how does that happen? You see, how does the issue of debt, how do you deal with that? And then the responsiveness between the department and the of water and sanitation and also the Department of Rural Development, how do you respond to situation? You know that you've got this challenge of a farm that you got, Department of Rural Development, it does not have a license and water. How responsive are you towards the Department of Water Sanitation and vice versa, you see? Because now the land is there, you have bought the land, does not have water, you report to the Department of Water Sanitation. How do you respond, Department of Water Sanitation, if both of you can get it? Because that is, we get indication that somebody, somewhere, does not do his or her job. On the issue of under-registered water users, you are indicating to us, Department of Water and Sanitation, that you find a farmer who registered to use 100 liters of water, but he actually ends up using twice of that of the. To me, you say you know that person is using twice the capacity. How do you respond? Because if you know there's a challenge, you have to do something to ensure, to make sure that the person pays for what he has done for on the mistake that he has done. Then you also indicated that in Mpumalanga, there are farms that are irrigating using acid mine drainage water. Can you be specific where, so that you can make an oversight and check where are those places? I'm saying, you said Mpumalanga, I made an example that there are other farms. There are other farms that are using acid mine drainage for irrigation purposes. I will request that you be exact so that we can do our own oversight to check how this process is unfolding. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'm aware that I'm sitting very far from you, so you can't see me, but I'm here. So maybe next time what you must do, before you recognize anybody, you must look this side.
Chair, just two things. You know we are discussing an important matter, which is water, an important commodity, which is becoming very scarce. And what we must avoid is to put a race tag on this important matter. Yeah. Now, I must indicate that nobody in this meeting ever said white people are owning water. But the question which was posed was that the majority of people who apply for licenses happen to be white. Why are blacks and Africans in particular not applying for these licenses? That was the question. So it was not about the fact that whites are owning water and so on. So let's not racialize this matter, because it's an important matter, and all of us as South Africans, we must be concerned about water and address it as South Africans, not as whites, blacks, Africans, and whatever. That's what we will have to do. Now the question which I would want to pose, Chair, you know rural development have raised a number of challenges. And I suppose that as you develop this piece of legislation, or as you attempt to amend the Water Act,
from where I'm sitting, I suspect that you are supposed to be interacting with all these relevant stakeholders. Your Department of Agriculture, Rural Development, and any other department which might have a direct impact on this aspect. The Department of Agriculture says to us that it's a working group on water use and irrigation. And they are saying the Department of Water is part of the working group, Rural Development is part of the working group, and Rural Development is raising all these challenges. Are you discussing these challenges in that working group? If not, why are you not discussing these challenges that are raised by the Department of Rural Development? Because from where we are sitting, we are politicians, we are members of parliament. What we expect from officials is to come to us and say, we have identified these challenges and this is what we are going to do to attend to these challenges and allow members to input on whatever you'll be suggesting before members and so on. But once you raise challenges and not solutions, then it becomes a problem for us as members of parliament. So are you part of this working group? Department of Water, in developing whatever policy that you are developing around the water usage, are there other departments involved? Are they part of the policy formulation? Are they making an input on your bill or an amendment bill which must come before this committee and so on? If not, why? If not, why? Because they must make an input because this thing affects everybody and so on. And what I would want to also hear from the Department of Agriculture, what is the impact of this legislation to both commercial and smallholder farmers? Is there any negative impact? If there is, can you share that with us in order for us to begin to share ideas as to how are we going to make sure that this thing does not impact negatively on commercial farmers and smallholder farmers? Because, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. If there is no food, there won't be any life. And for us to have food, we need water. So it goes without saying that the majority of water and so on will go to the Department of Agriculture or to farmers and so on in order for them to produce food, in order for you to eat, and then you must be able to live. But can you just share with us what are the negative impacts or what are the negative implications of these suggestions that are made by the Department of Water? Thank you very much.
Whether also the 4,000 odd dams that the department cannot account for will fall under these previous rights that relates to area. Today, you only can account for no more than 400 dams. But what about those 4,000 odd dams that you cannot account for? Could this be part of your private water that belongs to the pre-1998? And how does that get to be linked with what you are referring to in your National Water Act that says water belongs to the state, the minister, the custodian? Now, I've heard that song before. First time I came here, July 2014, in Boxburg of Bedwood, and I asked that question. Who owns water in this country? The other day I was in a place called Canaland. Slept in a B&B there. And the owner was telling me that the water I was drinking, it literally comes, the mountain range, where in they literally just get there and source water without any treatment, bottle it up, either straight to the shelf or to the B&B itself. And clearly that water is for free for those communities along that mountain range. I think we need to do a serious, which takes us back to the earlier point we've been raising about a need for us, on one hand, to talk about the audit of our water source. Where is our water? We are told it is, you know, somewhere where rainfall comes and, you know, majority of our water in parts of, you know, north part of KZN and some other parts in the country, where there's lesser rainfall. That would be one part of the equation. As to where exactly do we get the bulk of our water source? Apart from all these other initiatives, or the Super Highland Water and other new dams, on the other hand, having to be able to say to ourselves, the plan for us to be able to say, going forward, this is how we are going to map out a plan for us to be able to say, we now have this water resource as part of our inventory, as part of our audit. Going forward, this is how we are planning, so that we are not found wanting, wherein we are going to be dealing with emergencies from time to time. When agriculture also is to say, in the advent of technological development, we still have 63% or whatever figure that is dedicated to agriculture. In the advent of technology advancement, which to me must talk to the reduction of that 50-odd percent. As we talk about the irrigation system, whether we are making full use of those advances in our technology. Some countries where, you know, you have seriously, you know, arid land, are able to grow food and very nutritious food out of that irrigation system with very, very little water. Here we still have some abundance of water. Granted, we are rated or ranked number about 30 or 38, semi-arid, dry, and so on. But we still have some water that we're still wasting, I can safe to say. Now, for me, those are the three key things as we're dealing with this matter that we're dealing with. I hear all of these other nuances that relate to the law that is still coming. But that law must be assisted by us being able to say, we have this water resource, we have this plan, we are managing our water resource efficiently, especially from an agriculture point of view. The irrigation system, being able to be in keeping with advances in our technology. For us to be able to say, okay, fine, we are now moving in the right direction. Let's allow and then take the second round. We shall take perhaps let's start off with rural development and then come to the culture and then also water and sanitation department. Rural development.
Honourable Chair, I'll just try and respond to some of the issues, especially the one raised by the honourable member across the on the impact of the MOU that you have just signed. I think the MOU was signed this financial year in January 2016 by our DG. We In fact, it has improved our relationship between ourselves and the Department of Water Affairs. As I said, they are now permanent members of our approval structures. But the lot that we're still discussing in terms of that MOU regarding the roles and responsibilities, especially when it comes to the prioritization of land reform farmers for allocation of water immediately. We were discussing those issues, but I think with the MOU, it was signed 6 months ago. I think there's a lot of improvement in that effect. So we're still trying to deal with some of the critical issues that are outlined in the MOU. That was the reason why we said let's have an MOU which sort of the structured and discussion, including the policy proposals, et cetera, that have been proposed. We are discussing that in terms of that MOU. The other one on the issue of debt, or outstanding debt, what I will do is I will just provide examples, because we had a number of those, especially in the Mpumalanga province. I can provide the committee secretariat with those examples regarding the issues around the court orders relating to outstanding debt in as far as water debts are concerned. So I can provide that to the secretariat in terms of those examples that I was referring to. The last one, I think I've already alluded to from the honourable member on my left-hand side, to say what we've raised in terms of the our presentation, we're trying to highlight broadly the challenges that we have in land reform with regards to water allocation and water valorization, which of course, in terms of the MOU, memorandum of understanding that we have, we are discussing those issues and we're participating in such committees. I think those are the few that I can highlight, not unless I've left some. But there are ongoing discussions between ourselves and the department, because we've realized that if we don't talk, obviously the land reform program in the country will obviously fail. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first challenge is the process itself of licensing. It takes too much time. And the second one, really, as far as smallholder farmers are concerned, is lack of clarity as to the process of application. How do you apply? Who do you deal with? And that is a major challenge. And of course, the other one is the issue of use it or lose it. We just simply do not understand what informs that. Because for a long time we have had farms that were owned by commercial farmers, and they had water in them, but those farms were not productive. At what point will this apply? Smallholder farmers, there is an issue of long gestation to plant and not to plant, depending on conditions. So if you're saying then let's use it or lose it, what informs, at what point would somebody lose it? At what point would somebody, would you be aware, do you have enough resources to police the extent of utilization or non-utilization? And I think water rights has been a major issue. And I was very much interested to, maybe I will liaise with my colleagues, just to understand the percentage of smallholder farmers that have got water rights. Well, generally, that has been a major issue. I don't know whether we're talking water rights as different for irrigation, for example. They are struggling. I think my colleague from land reform did articulate that. But again, suggest that I think going forward, it is important that there is a transparent process that is known and communicated to all groups. It is indeed true that we cannot racialize the issue of water allocation. However, it is also a historical truth that most of the water rights are owned by white commercial farmers. And there's nothing wrong with that, because as we talk today, the people who are producing what we eat
are those farmers. So it is important that we actually support conscious farmers and outside of reach. This is what I was saying to my colleagues. We may want to emphasize development of smallholder farmers. Yes, that's right. But we cannot do that at the expense of growth. And the NDP is very clear on that we need to aggressively transform the sector without sacrificing growth. And indeed, that growth is what is being driven by white commercial farmers, if we use the notion of race. And I think what I have tried to explain to my colleagues on the commercial side was that they need to partner with some of the smallholder farmers so that one, capacity of those farmers is increased so that they know water use efficiency. And that's something that I do not see coming in the discussion. The efficacy of use, the monitoring of efficiency of water utilization. And that means buying irrigation infrastructure that allows for efficiency of utilization. Because you may have all the water rights. I've heard people who are irrigating 24 hours. And you wonder, at what point are you aware that now the plant must have absorbed? How many millimeters down for a certain plant? These are the type of education that should be integrated for smallholder commercial farmers. I have, for example, in the department set a target of 50 farmers per province that are there that must be commercial by year 3. In other words, they have got an income, a turnover of 100 million in the category, and that they have access to market, both national and international. And therefore, issues of quality come in there. So, Mr. Chair, for me, I think there is a discourse that is happening between us and the Department of Water and Sanitation. And I think it needs to be stated that we must remove the approach of challenges. We must talk solutions so that we assist the community in understanding the nature of the issues. But if we come here and begin to present challenges, we almost are accusing each other, and somebody gets into a defensive position. But if we always say we are a committee, we sit somewhere and discuss things, there must therefore be one voice for this committee, so that they understand the key issues. But it is not fair for the department to be seen as isolated, and therefore all questions are on it. There are rural development, the Department of Agriculture should be able to address issues because they come from the committee. It is therefore very important what the Honourable Whip said, that why are we talking challenges here? Are we trying to say to the Honourable Members, give us answers? To what extent is that realistic? Because we are closer to the ground. So I want to say, Mr. Chair, Honourable Chair, that I would not expect this type of discussion to occur before. I think we'll come here prepared to address the challenges and offer solutions which you are going to be able to tweak and see the gaps from an analysis standpoint of view, rather than us throwing these things to you. And consequently, whatever I said also as challenges, I think those must be resolved at our level, at the committee level. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As you speak, Mr. Lennon, I thought you would conclude by saying, for instance, as an example, that we shall bring in solutions to the agriculture department insofar as smart irrigation is concerned, with the advancement in our technologies. This is what we are encouraging the industry, the farmers, to do as we speak now, in the next month, in the next 6 months, and so on. Having learned from country A or country B, I thought you would conclude with those kind of remarks.
Thank you for the chair. I would have loved to talk comparatively with Honourable Chair, but I just do not want to waste your time around that, because I think we are faced with issues of unity. We are faced with issues of togetherness as a committee.
challenging this issue and making comparisons, because we're not doing it. There are countries like Israel. They have gone through this in a desert and managed to use water effectively. And they are the major exporters of food, of agricultural food. We have plenty of water compared to them. What is it that we can learn from them and other emerging countries such as Tanzania, Kenya, Brazil, Mexico, Argentina? They have gone through the same process. Are we saying we want to invent irrigation methods? Or are we saying the drip irrigation of Israel that Israel came up with is a point to learn and then say, how do we further make it better for South African conditions as opposed to COVID? Because you do that in a plant that doesn't deserve that. And much as you want it to be efficient, you begin to waste water. So therefore, you are correct, Chair. We do need to learn and understand that South Africa is not new in this discourse. Somebody has gone through this. To what extent are we learning from those people? So that what we consider challenges become solutions when we're here, or propose solutions when we're here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I was also very keen, Mr. Skip, you every time you spoke, you among others, you know, the so-called use it or lose it. But what do you mean by so-called? If as you proceed.
Chair, thank you. When the new Act came into power in 1998, there was a clause that was Section 32 and Section 33 of the Water Act, which said that you have a certain period of time whereby you can use the water. Now, you can explain why the water wasn't used, and that's where the use or lose it comes from. In other words, take a practical example. A farmer had water rights because he was a riparian owner, and according to Act 54 of 1956, he was therefore the lawful the use of that water right. That farmer didn't use his water right because he was, for instance, sick or whatever. Then there was a period of 2 years, and my colleagues can correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a period of 2 years where he could explain why the water wasn't used. Maybe he was sick or whatever. Then his son or somebody else could come in and apply for, you know, that water use. So that was the use or lose it. So if he couldn't in that period of 2 years explain why the water wasn't used, he would have lost it. That's in short. Chair, if I can,
you see, in our trade, you know, the little factory where we work in our piece job, when you use the term so-called, it has certain connotation. I hear you and I understand exactly where you're coming from. So I have thought you meant something else, that typically, you know, in our peace job we get to talk about. I'm saying our peace job in all fairness, because you don't know when you're good, for how long you're going to be in your job. You don't have any labor law, you don't have any CCMA, you don't have any, you know, union for that matter. So, if your party simply just tells you where to go, I mean, we've got Mr. Manuel here, you know, who suddenly is back here from Free State. So he himself, I'm sure, he has stories to tell. Anyway.
Chair, if I can just respond, I think that the DG made very good comments, and if we can take this to a slightly higher level, what I figured out that came out of all the questions is people want to prioritize, they want us to speed up the process, they want to know why farmers are, you know, dry farms and why don't the farmers get water with it. So there's a lot of issues. But one of the most important things that we asked, I think it was Honourable Choky asked the question, but now this new water bill, what is it going to be different? And I think what's important there is Section 32 to Section 35, that the sunset clause will be removed now. So I think that's the major difference between what's happening now. So once we have that in place, then we I think most of the problems will be solved. Then also in terms of the compulsory licensing process, that will be shortened, because we know at the moment it's a long process and it has to be shortened. Then in terms of the GAs, somebody also spoke about the GAs. The GAs will be reviewed every 5 years. So I think it's important that we look at that also as a way to get water to the people as soon as possible. Then in terms of the people spoke about the white farmers getting the water and the water right, and I think somebody else mentioned that we shouldn't talk about the race issues. However, this was discovered also during our catchment management forums, because we have catchment management forums in all the catchments in South Africa. And this was identified as a challenge, because some of the, and we call it the HDI, the farmers that didn't have access to the water, these forums are now assisting them to get on board and to help them to apply for licenses for water. So I think it's a very, very important thing that we, because some of the farmers don't know how to, they're not really on that level to know how to apply for licenses. So we are now assisting them. So we hope that challenge will be sorted out as well. I think that's an important one. Then I think Honourable Guni asked a question about, let's be specific about the reuse of water. This case is in Mafube. It's a mine that used to mine there, and now they're not mining. So there's AMD decanting, and that water is running into the system, polluting the rivers. So what we're saying is now, why can't we use that water for the benefit of communities in the area, and also not polluting the river systems? So Mafube is a very good case where we have the SWPN helping the department, that's Strategic Water Partners Network. It's between our department, we have donor funding from overseas, helping the communities as well to get this thing on board so that we can use this water in a much more beneficial way. I'm not sure whether my colleagues, with your permission, Chair, want to add to anything. Mr. Toko?
Thank you very much. I think we have noted all the major issues, and we agree that this is a transformation issue that requires the three main departments to work together, because it is a nexus that means it's a land, water, and food nexus. So this is why it needs to be approach in a more integrated manner. And I would like to respond to the issue of the debt issue. I think I've noted what my colleagues are saying. It's an issue that we are seriously looking at. We have attended on other issues around the payment arrangements, and we have intervened mainly in Mpumalanga working with Land Affairs on issues of the disputes between the irrigation boards and also the poor resource farmers. In some cases, we have written off debt, and in some cases, we have used the resource poor grant in terms of subsidizing the emerging farmers. Sorry, we use various names for the, I think the DTs have got a name, but we call them resource poor farmers. And we have also, even DG, extended the 3-year period that we have been supporting. We are extending that to 5 years. And in the new pricing strategy, that is going to come also to the portfolio committee. We have extensively engaged with the pricing strategy between ourselves and the Department of Agriculture. Maybe we need to include the rural and land affairs more. In terms of capacity, because water is a local issue, which needs to be managed at a local level, this is where we have build more capacity at a local level. We have beefed up our regional offices. We have separated water resource management so that we have dedicated capacity for the people that are going to help the historically disadvantaged in understanding the issues of applying for licensing as to where they have come. So we have it's an issue that we are improving on as the department, and we have built that capacity in all water management areas in South Africa, as Mr. Steed put up that map. You can see that in those 9 water management areas, there is now dedicated capacity where the communities can go in and discuss the issues of how do I apply for a license, where do I go if I am a resource poor farmer. Thank you.
Maybe, Chair, just one thing about the licensing process. There's a huge complaint about, you know, why is it taking so long to issue a license? And I think we must say that, you know, we've made a lot of improvements. You know, in the past, it took in some cases 3 years to get a license issued. Now that's for mining, that's for agriculture, that's for industries. Even for what simple wastewater works, you know, it took a long time. So that now has been limited now to a maximum of 300 days. But also, we're trying to, in terms of when it comes to resources for farmers and people that don't have water, we even try to prioritize that and make it much less than 300 days. The other one is also, in the past, the departments worked in silos. The Department of Water and Sanitation was, you know, we would issue a license and, you know, we do the consideration and then you issue a license. We now have, on a monthly basis, we have on a DDG level, we have several meetings that's taking place between our department, Department of Environmental Affairs, Department of Mineral Resources. Unfortunately, the other departments that are here today are not part of that. But in that, we discuss also, you know, the speeding up of the licenses. We try to get a one-stop shop in terms of before we can issue a license. So that also helps in the process.
I thought you would end up by saying, out of this session, now that they are not part of culture in particular, you shall then recommend that they pass. I thought you'd end up with that conclusion. Which makes sense.
Chair, I can recommend that to my MPD.
The DG for the culture wanted to just add one, 2 points, and then come second round.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think what one has learned and seems to be not present in the legislation is how do we plan for disasters. One of those is the drought that has hit us. That caused us, we do have disaster management act, the disaster management act, under it we have a number of other disaster risk-based plans. But then it triggered us to think more as to if something like this comes, what do we play, what do we do? Because it becomes a national and economic issue really. And therefore, this one in particular, it talks to the national availability of water, not only for farming. The dams have just gone down. What then are we putting in place to avoid situations like that? Do we take other dams and put them on the side and say these will come in this age or something like that? For my department, it's an issue that has allowed us, Chair, to really reconsider the strategies that we put into place. I just want to highlight that because sometimes it seems to be silent, but when it comes, it will rattle and ravage the nation. Thank you, Chair.
Well, what has become very clear is that rural development and land reform, they started the process of reopening of the claims. That was still ongoing, I would imagine. Reason why I'm raising that issue is because land, as we are all saying, land and water, you cannot separate these two. When you are to talk about the land question in our country, and how disposition has taken course, you do not separate that. In fact, I think we have had a situation where for a long time we have actually not been including water in that whole disposition equation. I would imagine that the Committee on Water and Sanitation
dealing with the sensitivities that we are dealing with that relate to land and water, we'll have to take a specific discussion with the rural development and land reform, especially as it relates to all the issues that they are dealing with. Yeah, that would be my point. I'm showing that members having to, as part of our way forward. The other area that I thought we might wish to, you know, just throw for ourselves, especially as we deal with the legislation that is still forthcoming, will be to engage our legal parliamentary office as to seriously having to unpack this whole notion of sunset clauses. Someone was saying at some point that these sunset clauses were given a period of 20 years within which you'll then have to think of revamping them, having to have a sunrise clause, if you like. I think we'll have to get that legal brain from within the department, within Parliament, be prepared for the legislation. And then the last commentary I wanted to make for the department, I was briefed at one point about your entire processes that are still to unfold to a point where you're talking about, you know, quarter three of 2017. Whether that cannot be fast-tracked for us to really begin. Because, you know, when I sit down getting to hear and think about some of the processes that are unfolding within government departments, you begin to think, Mr. Carlo, as to what is it exactly that takes so long for what you hear all sorts of things being said about the wheels of government, they're being slow, you know, they take their own time. And you begin to wonder and think, what is it that makes them so slow? Can't you really bring that legislation forward? Mm-hmm. And what stops it from being brought forward? Argument's sake, I'm saying to myself, number one, here we're dealing with real issues of life and death, water. For us to be really taking our own time, quarter three, 2017, and what happens in the intervening period? People suffer, get to business as usual, nothing happens. We all have to condition our minds, 2017 is coming, quarter three is coming. I'm sure there is a way out. I'm very positive. I am very, very positive. In fact, it should actually come as an instruction. That's my take. Rather than having to plead, it should actually come as an instruction, giving you no option whatsoever. That's what we should really do. I'm again sponsoring it to the committee for us as a way forward as to how best do you take it towards the whole process. Sorry, I saw a few hands. I'm sure the Madia, as we conclude, shall have to Mr. Fasson, Mr. Space, and Mr. Sharkin.
Chairperson, thank you. There is a solution for areas where we've got water, and it's like it's been said, if you fly over areas all along the river, you see it's green, and further on it's not. But we've got in areas like in Clan William, where they're going to expand the canal systems, taking water to areas, to new farming areas, where they couldn't farm there because they didn't have water.
you could look at Hartbeespoort area. You can easily expand water with the canal system to the rural areas where we've got excellent quality of ground, but just get the water there with the canal. And I think that is what the department should tell us, how they're going to expand where we've got water, how they can expand, and you can do that for hundreds of kilometers. You've got that in Uppington. They've got a canal system running there. You've got it in Kermuleen. You've got it in Hartbeespoort. We need to think out of the box how we get water to areas where we want to establish new farmers. And the canal system is a system that is not going to be that expensive doing it. It's cheaper getting water there from one area by canal than building a dam where you don't have water. The second problem that I have is, and it is a concern, we built in the Medupi project the Makola Dam, the initial request for water out of that dam was 6 million cubic meters of water. Exxaro then requested 20 million cubic meters of water to wash the coal. But the design changed on Medupi because when they borrowed $3 billion from the World Bank, the World Bank instructed that the grant of the loan is subject to a gas desulfurization plant that needs to be put up. That means that they're going to use 6 times more water than the design was of. Now what is the situation now? They can't get it from the Makola Dam. It's going to come from the Crocodile River. The Crocodile River will have to supply that water at Tabazimbi, 174-kilometer pipeline, and it was not designed. The Crocodile River area is for agriculture. The Rooikopies Dam is built for agriculture. Now, they're going to use in the region, they're going to build a pipeline that will transport between 70 million cubic meters and 100 million cubic meters of water, agricultural water. Now the question then becomes, who's going to get preference when we get into a dry season and when there is no water? Is it going to be the farmers or is it going to be Medupi? So now, there the farmers will eventually, I guarantee you, the quota of the farmers will be cut. And Medupi will get the water. Because they would say that's a national strategy. But you also forget that in the Hartbeespoort, in the bridge area, that's the food kitchen of the whole Gauteng. They produce 80% of agricultural that goes to Gauteng. And they would sit without water, or they could sit without water. So once again, it's planning, and we create that we put pressure on ourselves by allowing this to happen. So I would like to get a sense from the department, and maybe I won't get on the Medupi one now, but on the canal system, you know, that is an expansion, that's a way forward. We can take water to areas where we don't have water.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must say that I welcome the attitude from a lot of the speakers today with regards to farmers and the use of water. In the past, whenever we've raised the issue or whenever the discussion has been around farmers as water users, it's been on a very negative scale. And a lot of comments were made today about the fact that these farms are producing goods which we need. I welcome the change in tone of the conversation that we're having, but I think the prerogative is for the department to monitor the use and the allocation of the water. And many reports indicate that our current water resources, whether it's a drought or not, is over allocated. Can the department verify that? And how are we dealing with the issuing of water use licenses when we have an over allocated resource? And I also wanted to comment on the speaker from agriculture, I think it is, comments on us using examples from other countries who have overcome this water shortage. You know, I attended a presentation earlier in the year by the Israeli government. Yeah, it was held here in the Western Cape, although that's irrelevant. But the point is, the technology that they presented in their presentation, what they're using in Israel, is absolutely amazing. I was totally fascinated with some of the photographs that they showed us, where it's completely dry, dry desert areas, and they've got these flourishing food-producing farms with using all the various technologies. Now, one of the frustrations that these presenters at that presentation, one of the frustrations that they voiced there was that they have approached the South African government several times, and our government is reluctant to interact with them because for political reasons. And we are shooting ourselves in the foot. We don't want to interact with these countries. They have technology and they want to share this intellectual wealth with us, and we are saying thanks but no thanks. We need to overcome that and look at what we need to develop as a country and where we can get this information from and technology and assistance. Let's take it with two hands. And then lastly, Chair, this sunset clause, which we are going to retract. I'm just wondering how many water users are they actually affected by the sunset clause or are benefiting from the sunset clause currently? How many users are there? Do we have any idea of how many farmers are actually benefiting from the sunset clause? And just how much water, what volumes of water are we talking about? Because obviously once this clause has been revoked or amended by the new bill, this water will now, I'm talking in concrete terms, which I don't think is actually the real situation, but what volumes of water are being used, or do we have a measure in place? Do we have some kind of system that tells us how much water is accounted for by the sunset clause? There was one more thing which is not to come out. Okay, thanks, Chair.
Mr. Chauvin.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the engagement helps now the department to focus on the department is very much attention is called the department to just for the purpose of trying to resolve this point. That there's a need for coordination between the department and all stakeholders coming from this nature. And it's good that minerals is involved. That is one of the areas that we have not focused very much on. Now, that consultation, Chair, will in fact at some point include your key stakeholders, your unions, agricultural union, the users of water generally in that area. Because in the lawmaking process, you'll have to do that exercise. But I think from the committee point of view, Chair, we must now begin, as we have started, to identify new stakeholders. Irrigation schemes or irrigation boards are people that we must engage with at some point, Chair, as a committee. So these are people that allocate, that monitor, that coordinate the board. So there will be a need, Chair, so that we sort of engage with that particular level. Water boards. in the build-up to the legislation, because I know there's consolidation of water boards currently that's taking place. Is that consolidation takes into account the process in which we are now come up with a new act? How are we coordinating that? How do they participate and the accountability of the water board within the act? And it's correct, Chair, that the sunset clauses are negotiated settlements that in 1994, when we started the process of engagement, we have to compromise certain things. And correctly, they're given certain timelines, the time frame. If that time is time now for transformation, let it be so. You see, we cannot come with transformation and start apologizing as we have transformation. Why do we apologize? The fact that certain category of people are the beneficiaries. Why do we have to apologize? We don't have to apologize. It's transformation. It's revolutionary. We have to do that. Right? So therefore, Chair, what is very good out of this engagement is that what my two colleagues have raised currently, Honorable Basson and colleagues, that it's easy to move water into dry areas. Look, I don't buy that notion much. The issue is that the fertile land, who controls the fertile land? Where is the fertile land? Rural development, we have to look at and tell us, where is the fertile land? Because we keep on buying this dry land where now we have to transfer water there, when the fertile land is just lying there. And that's not your focus. And I'm saying, therefore, Chair, that correct as we have said earlier, that we cannot separate the land issue and water. You can't separate it. 1912, the first act, colonial act, that excluded indigenous people. If you go back to history and look at the issue of water and the struggles, and you know, throughout history, water has been an issue, Chair, a resource that was. Now I think we need to prepare ourselves. Maybe have a study tour to Israel. There's nothing wrong to do that. To go and see, especially if we don't have resources, maybe they can even fund the portfolio committee. Just to go and learn what is happening there and how they are dealing with the issues of drought and all of that. But generally, Chair, my last point, obviously, is that we must never, ever apologize to transform. And if this approach and the bill that is coming is not going to be revolutionary in nature, the committee has a responsibility to amend that entire bill and make it revolutionary in nature, meaning that it must be transformative in nature as you bring it. Because to deal with a legacy of almost 350 years, that would, because this is the only time, Chair, this is the only time that you must do this exercise, especially with the leadership that you see from the department that is ready, unions that are ready, in fact. Because this thing that we always call poor black farmers, it will come to an end. Poor for how long? All the time, poor black farmers, we must give them a little bit of water. They are farmers. What support do we give them? Equally to the support that this other component of the farmers have. Yes, it's correct that we must be careful when we raise these issues, because these people produce the food that we eat. Therefore, don't bring the race issue. You must be careful when you raise this thing. You'll stop farming and all of that. Most of the land is turning to game reserve today. Fertile land is turning to game reserve. I come from the rural area in the Northwest Province. You drive from Swartdrachen to Rustenburg. It used to be farms around there. They were farming there with a number of food. Today's game reserve is buffaloes, is rhinos that are roaming around. Go to Grootmariko, the biggest team in Grootmariko. What's happening in Grootmariko there? It's game farms. And therefore, you know, you then say, no, transformation, you know, must be careful, don't touch certain things. Let's touch those things, because Parliament is meant to do that. If Parliament is going to apologize, why are we here? Why are we elected to come here? That we are not able to transform and put the record straight, that those who are dispossessed must benefit. And this is the time. There's no other time, Chair. I'm saying that this point in your lawmaking process must sink very seriously. So if we don't do that, Chair, we'll be part of history that the Chair was there, a revolutionary was there, he was leading this team, he failed. And I don't believe that you are that particular person that wanted to be in charge. Together with this collective, you still will judge us that we're given an opportunity to do something different for people, and we're not able to do that. So let's do it, but let's work hard and let's just be focused, working together and giving support to our department. You know, once we do that, working with you, because you now understand the thinking of these politicians that are here. You now know what is it that must come into that law. You know, so it's because if we don't engage with you robustly, so you'll then think that everything is normal. I'm dealing with 1652. That's what I'm dealing with. The issue of water. The establishment of the refreshment station was about water by Jan van Riebeeck and his team. And you don't understand that. That's fine. No, I'm not going to buy that story. We are here, our term will come to an end soon, but we must make an impact so that history must judge us and judge us positively. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, quick one.
Yes.
Just
one question. I want to check how many commercial farmers that have converted their rights into a water license. Just that only check.
Thank you very much, Chair. The department indicated the issue of equity, which is very important, equity in the allocation of water allocation. If they can just briefly indicate to us how...
Sir, I saw your hand, Mr. Murray.
If they can indicate to us how will this compulsory licensing address this equity issue. In the light of time frames, because if we can work on the issue of time frames, that might even help us to get this thing moving quickly as possible. Thank you.
Mr. Murray?
You're
covered, sir. Are you
referring to Beach?
Yes.
Oh, no. My hand was not up, but because what we just speak, let me speak. Chair, let me just make suggestions. I think I'm simply amplifying what Honorable Chauke said earlier on. The first step which we must do in developing this piece of legislation is to ensure that we involve all the relevant role players. Firstly, let's start at this level. Interdepartmental cooperation between all these necessary departments. Secondly, intergovernmental cooperation, meaning we must involve the other spheres, your provincial counterparts and so on and so forth. They must be involved in this thing, including your local government. Because what is important is that somebody said this is an important piece of legislation and it can take a long time in ensuring that we pass this act. And for us to pass this act as quickly as possible, we must start now by involving everybody, in order for everybody to make his or his head input into this piece of legislation. Because, you know, the NCOP process has got its own cycle, which is a very long cycle, except a four-week cycle and so on. It takes very long. So, but if you start at this level by involving everybody, it means when the NCOP starts their process, you would have involved your counterparts at the provincial level so it becomes easier. When that bill comes to us, when we open it for public hearings and so on and so forth, the process will also be faster in order for us to pass this piece of legislation. So I agree with you, Chair. Let us speed it up. And let us not hide behind this thing of, you know, government processes, they take a long time and so on and so forth. It is us. It is us who come with those processes, so let's not behave as if somebody from somewhere in planet Mars and so on has imposed a certain process on us, therefore we must stick to that particular process. So let's make sure that we come to a process which is going to be faster for everybody, because this is very important. So that is my suggestion on this aspect, Chair. The other body which must also interact as quickly as possible with this process is your MINMEC. You must also investigate possibilities of having a joint MINMEC between the three departments in particular. water and rural development. In order for you to ensure that your MECs, they also buy into this thing, they also understand what is it that you are doing. When we say this is a transformative legislation, it is important, it is revolutionary, we must do so. But we must not forget the important people that must play part in this thing. Your farmers. All of them, irrespective of the size, whether it's smallholder farmers, whether it's commercial farmers and so on, all of them, they must be involved in this process. And you know how to interact with them. So they are farmers unions and so on and so forth. So let's involve everybody. Parliament will be rising in December. You are not supposed to rise. Whilst you'll be on holidays, just make sure that you do your work. When we come back, bring the bill to us in order for us to process it. Thank you very much, Chair.
Clearly, the process towards this legislation is going to be a very interesting one. That's why we cannot wait for court action. That's why we must fast-track that process. I've thrown it to the committee for support. Are we at one?
Yes.
Thank you. Do we have any other issues you want to respond?
Chair, if I can just respond, in terms of the figures, the honourable members asked questions about how many water the verification and how many of the sunsets, what's that figure. We have it, but I'm not comfortable enough to put that. I mean, I've got it here, but I mean, I'm not prepared to put that figure because I can't justify that. So we'll go back and we'll give written feedback to this committee with your permission, Chair. That's the first thing. Chair, the other thing is also what I think
by when?
Yeah.
Hi.
Time frames.
In a week?
Yeah.
By next week Friday, Chair.
Well. Shall we then say we come back here on the 16th of November. We shall be getting that information. Okay, can we write the letter to that effect, Martin? Thank you.
Chair, then maybe just from our side, if I'm not going to say in conclusion, but you know, just one fact which I want to bring to this meeting is of the House is that we've got just a certain amount of water in this country. We can't make water. So now what we're saying is water on surface, water underground, it's one cycle. It's, whether it's underground or whether it's on surface, you don't make water. Even with AMD, if you treat the water, it's not water that you make, it's water that's been used by the mines. The same with the farming. I mean, if you use water for irrigation, that water goes into the underground system, being taken up by the plant, and then it's been evaporated. The challenge is, how do we subdivide or divide that water to make a fair and equity decision in terms of so that everybody in South Africa get its fair chance to get that water. How do we do that? It's by means of licensing. So we issue licenses. So in the license, you know, we thin them down in terms of how much water they can use. Then the other very important thing is the reuse of water. That's something that we haven't focused a lot in South Africa, is to reuse water. There's a lot of water that's being used by either industry or municipalities that is flowing out at a bad quality. So our enforcement must be improved, and that's what we're doing, and my colleague here also elaborated on that. So we must try to improve our enforcement to make sure that the water quality that comes out there is better. The other thing is also, we have to think about a paradigm shift in South Africa in terms of the use of industrial water and of mine water that's been used. When we talked the first time about reusing of acid mine drains for potable use, you know, the people just, they lost it. You know, how can you drink potable water or water that's been treated, you know, from AMD? They're doing it in Mashlengi, those people are drinking the water. They're doing it wastewater, they're doing it in Bantuk. There's a lot of places that they're using it countrywide. So we must try to think out of the box. How are we going to make best use of the water that we have available in this country? And I think all the discussions around the table today is actually also, you know, pointing in that direction. is to be smarter with the water that we have.
Okay. Any comments?
No, Chair, except to emphasize the fact that we continue working together. Once again, we are not going to bring issues of challenge to this committee. We will endeavor to work together as a team.
Yes.
No, Honorable Chair, I'm covered by my duty in my right.
So clearly here we're dealing with the issues related to the management of our water resource in the bay, whether we're going to be talking about accessibility, whether we're going to be talking about access, whether we're going to be talking about water that the department cannot account for, whether that water is to be water that leaks, or is to be water, the number of dams that you cannot account for. You know, when you drive out of Grahamstown towards the Port Alfred, you have a water stream. Water that literally gets to be bottled, no treatment whatsoever, into a shell, straight. And people in Port Alfred, they have that major challenge though, that relates to water. They have to buy water all the time. Water is very brackish. And people in Makana, there were serious issues of water. But there is water, there's a stream of water flowing out of a hill, wherein people literally walk in there or drive past there and just steal the water and then go away. And the municipality there at Makana has made it very easy for them to steal nicely. They have actually made the parking so nice that they must just park and then steal properly, and then drive away with bottles of water, 5 liters and so on, as they drive towards Port Alfred. Whether that is that water, whether that is water in Kanana land, where they also, the BNB owner there, just receive water bottled straight into their refrigerators. Well, those are all management issues that we are dealing with here. That the department also is expected to deal with. Whether that is also policing of that use or lose it principle, whether that is also impacted or rather affected, the word I'm looking for. Whether also that water that is being stolen in the, along the Vaal River stream by a number of farmers there, or around Free State in your Paris, where there's a specific channel that has since been dedicated towards those farmers there. But whether that is that, those are the kinds of water that we're talking about. All of those are issues that you are expected to manage. It's whether indeed that is happening, I guess, with the new legislation, but also these are issues that are not expected to wait for that legislation. I mean, if you have your blue scorpions, in this instance, you do not have that capacity. How many blue scorpions do you have?
Nothing.
How many?
Nothing.
For the whole country.
We're doing compliance.
How many? Are there more than 10? For the country.
Yeah, no, they are. Well, we've also trained.
How many, more or less?
I think we've trained, what is the amount that compliance...
How many do you have? I'm not asking how many of those are trained.
They've trained...
Anyways, those are the kinds of things that we are dealing with. All of those, they talk to that management of our water resource. at the end having to protect our resource. That's what your blue scoping are expected to do. Do we have any further issues raised, members, Mr. Basson?
Chairperson, there's an outstanding report from the recruiter's Sprite Money Bank that should have been before this committee, or the date you said was the 28th of October. So the department should then also bring that report to the next meeting.
Thanks for that, Mr. Payton. Mr. Staker, sorry.
Thank you. Chair, I think this is a really valuable discussion, and I would like to request that we do the same with the dealing with AMG, because there's water use licenses there as well. And there's another whole can of worms that we need to open. So please can we put that on our program that we have this discussion around the water use and the
mind
as well.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to propose within the next engagement as part of the item for our engagement, invite the Auditor General back again, Chair, to deal with issues of audits of water boards. Because you know that currently when we deal with audits, when you do the annual report, we don't have the report of water boards. So I think there's a need that so that they are synchronized together with the alliance with the annual report. So I think we need to invite the Auditor General to brief us on the preparations to take over auditing of water boards. Maybe in the next meeting we could work on that. Thank you.
Okay. All of those are straightforward issues that talk to way forward. When we went to Madibeng, we interacted with the industry, both from meat processing and also your mining communities. What came out of that session is that also we went as far as even Kretlen, where there exists no water, save for the tempering. I can safely say that it's the Honourable Chair is the consequence. But, you know, how you also approach it, you know, let's just go there, you know. It was a very, very sad state of affairs. Now, again, even there, your farmers have water. The communities do not have water. So you have that report that is expected. I think last week one of the officials from the department did mention something to the effect that they're almost ready with the way forward. If you can get that report to the 16th as well. Clearly, we will have to work towards bringing that legislation in the first quarter of next year. So that we see as to how we take it forward. What else is missing?
Chairperson?
Yes.
The public protector report, the minister indicated last week that she would forward to this committee on the Lesotho Island scheme that allegations was made against her. So if we can maybe get that report as well.
Thanks for that, Chair. Maybe just one last point before we break. Yes, by way of feedback.
Chair,
we had anticipated that we would go to COP22, ratification of the sense of climate. We're working on getting through that Lesotho Highland Water Project. We still are battling with time. We thought we would make it 7th of December. Nadia is just informing that they seem not to be available at that time. But we'll work on the details. So that's generally how far we have gone.
Sorry again, I think we're done, but nonetheless, I thought you would reflect a little bit on the rainwater issue, especially the report that we read in the Sunday newspapers. It's important that maybe we should reflect and then agree maybe as a committee that there's a need to urgently, not summoning, but inviting rainwater to appear before the committee as a matter of urgency. So that we get to know those issues. There is no way that we can have such allegations that are public knowledge now, and this committee does not come on board. And I thought to sort of want to reflect on that chat we close, that maybe either we package them for another day very soon and then deal with that response for that allegation.
Chair,
can
you
indulge
me once more? Just linked to the water board, there was also that request I made for the report on the members of the board in their terms of office. As we've seen, some of them have gone past the date. I was requesting a feedback on that as well, or presentation on that from the minister as well, please.
Chair, with regards to the rainwater issues, I'm sure we must all have gone through that report in the written papers. After an interaction I had with the chair of the board, Mrs. Hashat, we have resolved that we need to relook into our program. And schedule them to come before us on the 23rd of November. They are quite damning, the report.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a damning report. We also, as we are all in the know by now, that there's been a change of how we do things with regards to water boards. Again, guided by our money bills, they themselves are the ones that come before us. The timing for them is quite an awkward one, different from the national department. They are more inclined to come before us along the municipal to a point where they present or rather table the annual reports in December. So we can only bring them here when we come back. You're looking at any time around February, effectively. That's what is practical. All of the issues you are raising, Mrs. Baker, shall then have to be encompassed in that report. We no longer allow Mr. Singh to come and speak on behalf of all of those water boards.
Mm-hmm.
Water boards come and speak for themselves,
mm-hmm.
and report for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we engage them individually. We're looking at having to bring them here, at least even if it means spending 2 days,
mm-hmm.
so that we do a proper job. A message also was indicated by the chair of Rainwater that indeed they have received a notice from the Office of the Auditor General that this financial year, Office of the Auditor General is indeed going to audit their books. So that's a message that we have also been spreading through the Office of the Auditor General for all these other water boards. the details about the term of office and all of those, I would imagine those are the kinds of things that would have to deal directly with them as and when they are before us. Maybe what we might also wish to do is to prescribe as to who must come before us. You have an instance at some point where in you only have the CEO and the CFO. It ends there. You don't have anyone from the board, so it happens. So this time around, we'll have to prescribe. At least you have somebody who's a chair, somebody from within the board who is part of the audit team. We'll have to communicate some ideas through Matia. Excellent. Do you think we're done? Let's thank the department for work done. Let's thank the culture department. Let's thank the rural development department. Let us thank the members represented by the whip of the committee on the culture. All of them that are here and also that are not here, let's thank them and wish them to that. Mr. Maloyi shall pass the message through on their behalf. They were well represented. The rural development couldn't make it because they have their own meeting. Let's also thank Pastor and also AgriSA, trusting that you did indeed benefit out of this exercise. It speaks directly to yourself. You are the major beneficiary, out of this very scarce resource in our country, which is called water. Thank the entire section within the public that made it here. I don't know if there's anybody from the media, represented by Mr. Mlapo. He knows all of them. He deals with them all the time, our communications person there. Members, the meeting is adjourned.
We should stop at the rank order. No, I'm not sure. Members, look up.
You want me to
can you see what I want? It's just one thing.
Donkey.
I'm going to
tell you the idea.
Okay. You can take it, Mary Jane. I'll be there next one.
Thank you very much.
Oh, that's
Thank you.